This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello! Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Food for Thought. This is the podcast that's on a mission and it's going to equip you with all of the evidence-based advice that you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, Sunday Times best-selling author of The Science of Nutrition. Please go check out my new book. I think it will help a lot of people out there. And founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. Now, in each of the 12 episodes, I'll be joined by guests, all of whom are experts in their field, which is wonderful. So together, we can all learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. The foods that we eat shape our thoughts, actions, emotions, and behavior. This is something that I speak about often. And even unknowingly, we use food to soothe our moods and clear our heads. And there's still such a prevalence placed on the way that we look rather than, you know, how we feel. So let's continue to keep shifting the importance to how we're thinking, how we feel every day. So this week's Food for Thought sees research fellow and dietitian Dr. Wolfgang Marx and I discuss how much of an impact our diet and lifestyle can have on our brain and what we can do to boost our brain power. Hello, Wolf.
Howdy.
Hi, thank you so much. All the way from Australia, coming on the podcast today. This is definitely your area. And I know when we met, we're working on another project aside from obviously the podcast. I thought, oh, I have to get him on. Have to get him on this pod.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you. Let's start by saying, you know, I think a lot of people know of the term antioxidants, of course. I think they're used probably out of context, actually, a lot nowadays in yes. the media. But what foods would you say are the best sources of these and how does it impact our brain health?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. And you're so right. It is kind of a term that's become sort of co-opted. It's a little bit of a buzzword now. And I think it's something that is in our sort of collective vocabulary, but we may not be totally familiar with what it actually means. So I suppose if we sort of take a step back, I think it's the best place to start is this term free radicals, which you might also be familiar with. And I guess in a nutshell, what free radicals are these unstable compounds that can potentially cause damage to the cells that surround it. That's very much in a nutshell definition. But essentially, these free radicals, they're produced all the time as part of, you know, healthy metabolism. And our body has these inbuilt antioxidant defense systems, which essentially regulate these free radicals to ensure that they don't cause harm. Because what other people, the other sort of point that I think is not recognized is that we actually need some of these free radicals. They're actually really important for, you know, various signaling processes. But the problem is that when we are exposed to long-term exposure to I guess, various factors, things like pollution, cigarette smoke, our genetics can play a role, chronic diseases. This balance essentially gets out of whack, you know, this balance between free radicals and our antioxidant system. And so this imbalance is essentially what we call oxidative stress. Mm. And the issue with oxidative stress and this kind of imbalance is that we believe that the brain is particularly susceptible to oxidative stress, and that's in part because the brain is really metabolically active, and so it generates a lot of free radicals just through normal metabolism, and it's also really high in lipids, which are particularly susceptible to free radical damage. And so what we've found is that there's a series of interesting studies that have found that people with depression, as well as other mental illnesses, things like schizophrenia in particular, they have higher levels of this oxidative stress compared to healthy controls. And some studies even found that when people with depression are given antidepressant therapy, these levels of oxidative stress markers are actually reduced, which I think you know, really provides that sort of further evidence that, you know, oxidative stress might be linked to our mental health. So that's kind of like the introduction to what antioxidants and oxidative stress and how that relates to our brain health is. But I think the really interesting bit is that our diet is this key source of these antioxidant compounds that can help bolster our antioxidant defense systems. And what's interesting is that they come in all shapes and sizes. So there's vitamins like vitamin C, vitamin E, minerals such as selenium. Protein-rich foods provide cysteine, which is kind of like one of the building blocks to antioxidants. Mm. And so it's difficult to narrow it down to any particular food or food group, but essentially a whole food diet is something that contains a whole host of different compounds. And so by whole foods, I mean things like whole grains, your fruits, your vegetables, seeds, nuts, extra virgin olive oil and the rest of it.
Yeah, you've explained that beautifully. I think it's given such a good introduction to this episode because, like you said, they come in different shapes and forms. And I think a lot of people will hear, you know, words like flavonoids mentioned or let's start with polyphenols, for instance. You know, is if you could explain again to our listeners the difference or the role that polyphenols take, you know, on cognition or fatigue. I know you've just given a good overview of oxidative stress and antioxidants, but I think these words used interchangeably can really confuse people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think just sort of touching on the antioxidant, I guess the sort of misunderstandings around antioxidants, I think the other sort of key one that I see pop up is that we think, oh, well, antioxidants, they must be good. So a whole lot of antioxidants must be even better. And I think what we've found from a lot of the antioxidant supplement trials is that the evidence really isn't very supportive that, you know, those mega doses of these antioxidant vitamins and stuff is very well, it will be beneficial for you. And instead, I think it's really about relying on getting those antioxidants from our diet. But the polyphenols, I'm glad you mentioned this because this is a particular passion area of mine. Yes. I think this is a particularly fascinating area. Essentially polyphenols are a group of bioactive compounds that are found in, I guess, varying concentrations in really almost all foods. So, before we even touch on, you know, their bioactive properties in terms of, you know, our mental health and our brain health, polyphenols are also responsible for things like the color of the food. So the reason why blueberries are blue, in part because of the pigment that certain polyphenols in blueberries, you know, that they have this deep blue purple color. Mm. They also responsible for flavor. So I don't know if you've ever tried like a very fresh or a very sort of high quality extra virgin olive oil, but you know, when you have that in your mouth, you have that sort of burn at the back of your throat. That sort of burn, that astringency, is actually due to some of the polyphenols that are in that olive oil. So they're responsible for all sorts of things that give, you know, the characteristics of food. But what's interesting is that they also have all sorts of bioactive properties that we think are related to our mental health. So they have anti-inflammatory properties that is an area of quite large research. But what's now developing is that it has this really strong connection to our gut microbiome. And it's kind of this interesting bidirectional process where the composition of your gut microbiome actually influences how polyphenols behave in your body. So essentially the way that polyphenols act in your body might actually be different to the way they act in my body, yeah, simply because of the composition of our gut microbiome. And this kind of goes the other way as well, where polyphenols can actually act as prebiotics and essentially increase the levels of specific bacteria within our guts. They have this really interesting dynamic that's only just now being sort of understood and fleshed out. But essentially, because of all these really interesting properties, they're now being explored for, I guess all sorts of chronic diseases, but that in particular, cognition and depression. So much of the research has focused on the role of, I guess, specific subclasses of polyphenols, and that's where the term flavonoids comes in. So if you think of polyphenols as kind of this umbrella term, underneath polyphenols, we have all sorts of subclasses, and one of the major classes is flavonoids, and these are a type of polyphenols that are found in things like spices, fruits like pomegranate, and berries, particularly blueberries. I guess on the depression side of things, this has not been as well researched, but it's something that's only in the last sort of 5 years that we're seeing more and more studies come out. And there's certainly a number of really interesting observational studies where they've looked at really large cohorts of people and looked at the differing rates of polyphenol consumption. And they see that for people that eat a high level of particular subclasses of polyphenols, that results or is associated with a roughly 40% reduced risk of depression. There's a whole host of developing studies, and I think it's a really interesting area that we're only just sort of teasing apart.
I mean, I'm hooked already. I think
so am I.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of. I know blueberries are your key kind of research.
That's right.
Food item, of course, but you know, all dark berries in general. You know, we get a lot of blackberries in the UK that you can pick from your garden. You know, I'm trying to encourage people to really get what they can, and these are also really beneficial, aren't they? These you mentioned pomegranates and things. It's just so important that we emphasize the fact we're unique. I love the part where you mentioned, you know, these polyphenols have a unique effect on everybody, because we know our gut microbiome is different. You know, we're all completely different in terms of how we'll respond, which is what makes nutritional science completely fascinating, but in its infancy, I guess, because it's so hard to measure, isn't it, to get anything from it.
Absolutely. It's kind of, you think you understand the relationship between nutrition and something, and then you dig a little deeper and it gets more complex, and you think, all right, now I think I figured it out, and you dig a little bit deeper and then it gets more complex. And it's endlessly interesting, but it gets more confusing the more you look at it.
I mean, this is just it. I can imagine being in your shoes. It just must be absolutely mind-boggling. But for all of our listeners, just try and get these dark berries in and different color vegetables and fruits. And, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive. Yes. For us, you know, we import a lot in the UK, particularly things like pomegranates and blueberries. So what you can do is buy frozen berries, which are just as beneficial, everyone listening. You know, that the nutrition is kept when it's frozen, and it will be released, you know, when you defrost it again for you to consume. But are there any other items of foods? What about things like, I guess, oily fish? We haven't really discussed omega-3s yet. We should definitely touch on that, shouldn't we?
I think that's the other major bioactive compound that has received a lot of research in terms of mental health and cognition. I guess to to begin, I suppose, if, for listeners that may not be familiar, omega-3 fatty acids, when we talk about this, we're talking about these types of fatty acids predominantly, like if you walk into your chemist or your pharmacy, oftentimes when you look at the omega-3 fatty acid capsules, usually two words come up. It's EPA and DHA, or eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid. These are these two primary omega-3 fatty acids that have been researched and seem to be primarily responsible for its effect on not just mental health and cognition, but also for heart health and all the rest of it. And so omega-3 fatty acids, they have several different beneficial mechanisms that we think are related to our brain health. But I think probably the most well-studied and most well-understood is the role of omega-3 fatty acids in modulating inflammation. Oftentimes when we think about inflammation, we sort of think about, joint pain or, arthritis and these sorts of things. But actually inflammation is a really important driver of our mental health. People with depression have high levels of inflammatory markers compared to healthy controls and these sorts of things. And so because of these interesting mechanisms that we now understand, as well as large studies of observational studies where we know that populations that consume the highest amount of fish also have the lowest rates of depression or lower rates of depression, there's now been countless randomized controlled trials, which we consider as our sort of highest level of evidence on the sort of evidence hierarchy, that have overall shown that supplementation with omega-3 fatty acids seems to be an important intervention for managing depression.
Yeah, this is one of the areas I remember in my first, but at university, it was just, I remember going home from the first lecture I had, quite naively, but saying to all of my family, "You're not eating enough woolly fish. You don't get your omega-3s. That's you right. have to supplement." And I just told all of my family. I got them all on the supplements. But no, obviously, as time has progressed, we've got more and more research in this area. And it's so important. And I think a lot of people are, I mean, you can, let's just discuss the plant-based option, of course. So people that don't consume omega-3 in their diets, it's the algae, isn't it, that the fish consume in the first place. So those supplements, has there been research on the algae DHA supplements?
There hasn't been as much research on the algae-derived sort of EPA and DHA, but I wouldn't see that as a hindrance to selecting those. I think chemically the DHA, whether it's from fish or whether it's from algae, is as far as I'm aware identical, so I don't see why one would be as effective as the other.
There you go, everyone. There are options for absolutely everybody to get your omega-3 fatty acids into your diet. Now, food and mood is an area, Wolf, that is very topical, I think, especially for us in the UK at the moment, because, I mean, it's very dark and it's winter here. I know that you're currently going through a heat wave in Australia, but...
That's right. The opposite problem, yes.
Yeah, we've got the opposite problem of minus temperatures in the evening. So I think everybody's always fascinated with what can I do to improve my mood. Do you have a few dietary tips for people here or areas you can discuss?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the key points that's really being shown in the research that both we do and the literature in general is that there's this move away from this particular food or this particular food group or even this particular compound is what's responsible for a diet being healthy or this is what we need. All we need to do is drink, three tablespoons of olive oil and we'll, improve our mood sort of thing. It's instead what we're seeing is that it's more about the diet as a whole. So it's a move towards dietary patterns. So it's not necessarily, had some cake and that's going to ruin my sort of mental health. It's really about what are you eating over the long term, over the week, over the months, these sorts of things. And so what we are really looking at is the role of the Mediterranean diet style of eating pattern and how that can improve our mental health. And indeed, we can see that there are really dozens of observational studies which have shown in various populations, in various countries, age groups, from various different labs that have found the same results, which is that a higher adherence to a Mediterranean style diet is associated. Don't want to get any researchers offside there. Is associated with a reduced risk of depressive symptoms. And I think before I sort of proceed, I'll just sort of explain what we mean by a Mediterranean style diet.
Yeah.
And that's essentially a minimally processed whole foods diet, which has a focus on, I guess, plant-based foods. So it's not entirely vegetarian or vegan. There is some level of meat within the diet, but it's largely focused on those whole food, so things like fruits, vegetables, but also beans, spices, and extra virgin olive oil. And so while we have looked at the Mediterranean diet exclusively, and I can talk about some of the randomized controlled trials that we have conducted, I do want to just flag that other dietary styles, so things like the Okinawan diet or Nordic diet, all these sorts of things. I think it's again, it's not you have to eat this exact dietary style. When you look at a Mediterranean diet or a Nordic diet or what have you, the underlying features of all those diets are the same, right? They're all minimally processed. They're all high in plant foods. They're all low in your ultra processed foods and such.
Yeah, absolutely. And absolutely, as you said, I think the Mediterranean diet's got, it's just got all the research surrounding it now, and it's meant to be used as a rough guide. It's not, nothing in life dietary wise should be rigid and to the book. We've got to have flexibility as human beings to fit into our everyday life. But the principles, they are wonderful. And I write about those in my new book. And I know for everybody listening, we discuss the Mediterranean diet, the SMILES trials, lots of things, a lot on this podcast. Yeah, we're big fans over here.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, all the make you very proud. We're trying to get everybody on board with their using their olive oil and getting their, lots of fiber and things into their diet. But are there any specific vitamins and minerals? Because this is the question that, whenever a journalist approaches, you want that headline and they're like, what specific vitamin or mineral will boost our mood? What would you answer to that type of question?
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, so this is a good time to ask this question, because we've recently just finished it was probably a 2-year project where we've developed a set of international guidelines for the use of various dietary supplements for our mental health. So this is essentially a resource for clinicians to look to see, well, what is the evidence behind all these specific vitamins and minerals that we see in the media and that our patients are coming and interested in. So this is, yeah, good timing. So I guess we can say that in terms of vitamins and minerals, I think zinc is one that has a number of small randomized controlled trials, but there's still some clinical evidence to show that zinc supplementation can be an intervention to reduce clinical depression. Zinc is the highest concentration of zinc in the body is actually in our brains, and particularly in a part of our brain called the hippocampus, which is a really important part of our brain for learning, memory, mood control, these sorts of things. It can also influence various signaling things like BDNF, which can, I guess it's related to neurogenesis and the growth of our brain cells. Yeah. It's all these sorts of things. Folate is another vitamin that seems to be associated with our mood. So folate is involved in this pathway called the one carbon cycle, which is involved in a whole host of things, but essentially it's also involved in the production of dopamine, serotonin, all these neurotransmitters that are related to our mental health. The randomized controlled trials are also overall supportive. What's interesting is that it seems to be kind of form specific. So if there's folic acid, if folate is provided as folic acid as a dietary supplement, it seems to be not so effective. But when it's delivered as this form of folate called methylfolate, which is this more bioactive form of folate, it seems to be quite effective in certain populations.
So we have, just on that note, sorry to interject, on the thing, obviously a lot of people, maybe it's just because I'm pregnant at the moment myself, but are thinking, folic acid. Most people hear of folic acid just to do with pregnancy. I don't think they realize there's a link, like you've just mentioned here, to other areas of our health. And what's... obviously pregnant women should be taking, folic acid, because that's where we've got the randomized controlled trials. It reduces the risk of neural tube defects. But it's so interesting to hear you say that there are other areas that are just not spoken about enough. Why do you think this hasn't been raised to public health level? Is it because of the data just emerging?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. So, folic acid for neural tube defects, we have this very strong high level of evidence to support it. And it's something that is applicable at a population level. Whereas I guess for folic acid, in terms of its effect on our mental health, the evidence is very preliminary. We don't have those really, really high, large randomized controlled trials just yet. And I think what's important to keep in mind with our discussion around the use of various vitamins, minerals with mental health is that we're often talking about its effectiveness in people with clinical depression. So it's not necessarily something that the general public should take to prevent depression. We're really talking about people that are clinically diagnosed at the moment.
Yeah, don't go out, everybody, and just buy a load of zinc or folate, please, just because of what we're saying. Which
that's right.
that's the worrying aspect, and that's the problem with the media. I'm so sorry I interrupted you there as well. So you were leading on from folate and its impact.
I'll say it's probably best to cut me off. You know, you have a researcher talking about the topic of interest. You can probably talk until the cows come home. So please.
No, but it's absolutely brilliant, and we all want to learn. We really do, and it's just so important that we bring back the fact that this is research at the moment. And yeah, like Wolf and I are not suggesting anybody go out and suddenly make these huge changes. But what you can do, though, is get more of it in your diet as well. I mean, we Absolutely. Do know the absorption rate is a bit more tricky for things like folate in the diet. But Wolf, this is Mediterranean diet again, isn't it, pretty much?
That's right. That's exactly it. I think, you know, we learn more about the various compounds, but for the general population, it really just comes back to the basics of eating those nutrient-dense foods, and you know, you're sort of covering your bases without even sort of really thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. Now, obviously, clinical and diagnosed depression, but what about things? Because I remember in my lectures in the early days discussing, you know, neurodegenerative diseases, things like Alzheimer's. You know, the branches of dementia, cognitive impairments, mm-hmm. Strokes can impact the brain. The research there does seem to be limited, doesn't it? But do you feel there's any further developments with nutrition?
Yeah, so I think with neurodegenerative disorders in particular, I see this real... I guess evidence gap, or I guess what you might call like an effectiveness gap, where if we're talking about nutrition to prevent these neurodegenerative disorders, I think the evidence is a lot higher. I think we know a lot more about what we can do to reduce our risk of these. But for people that already have, you know, say Alzheimer's disease and the like. The nutrition interventions, last time I've, you know, had a look at the evidence, hasn't been overwhelmingly supportive. And I think, you know, it hasn't been really an area of effect. But in terms of prevention, we know that, you know, it's always the same sort of culprits, you know, long chain omega-3 fatty acids, B vitamins, particularly folate, vitamin D, flavonoids, as well as food groups such as seafood, fruits, vegetables. What's interesting is, I guess, caffeine consumption seems to be associated with a reduced risk of some of these neurodegenerative disorders. But yeah, I think that the evidence is a lot stronger for the preventative measures.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, this is a balanced plate, everybody. So this is carbohydrates, a bit of protein on your plate, vegetables, a bit of healthy fat, you know, how to build that plate. And that's going to make sure you get those key areas of nutrition into your diet. I would caveat the caffeine, obviously, with how much you have will have a huge impact here.
Yes. I totally agree. And you know, it's that that balance between, I guess, the acute effects of caffeine and consumption versus overconsumption and all these sorts of things. So, yeah, it's not a prescription to just, you know, drink a whole bunch of Red Bull throughout the day.
Well, do you know, in our clinic, we get clients that could easily have 8 to 10 cups of caffeine a day at work.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Yeah, cutting that is tough.
I absolutely believe it. Yeah, it's yeah.
It's a great stimulant for some, but yes. Anyway, in terms of these conditions, do you see a future, Wolf, where we can perhaps, in your area of research, get to a point where we're able to reverse? And I know you said it's more preventative, but do you feel that the future is positive here in terms of the research you're conducting?
I guess it depends on the condition. I think, as I mentioned, I think for the more neurodegenerative disorders, I think it's our best bet is for prevention rather than reversal in terms of nutrition as intervention. I think, you know, there's other quite amazing therapies that are coming out for treating it. But I think the role of nutrition, I think, is probably more in the prevention. But for mental health, particularly your common mental disorders is the term, so depression and anxiety, I think that nutrition interventions can play a quite an effective role in the management and reduction of symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. Well put, I think. Very, very well put there. And let's just touch, before I move on to other questions here, about inflammation a little bit, because I think it's another area you've touched on earlier, polyphenols perhaps having anti-inflammatory benefits mm-hmm. as well, responses in the gut. But inflammation to people can sound really scary. And of course, we don't want to say you ever want to boost your immune system, but perhaps yes. you could explain the concept of inflammation and what we can do to avoid it, really.
Yeah, sure. So I guess the tale of inflammation is very similar to the tale of antioxidants in that, you know, inflammation is a crucial part of our body's, system. So we need that inflammatory response when I guess what inflammation is our natural response to protect itself. So, you know, if you cut your finger, you need your inflammatory responses to, send those immune system cells down to the site to protect it from infection and all these sorts of things. And so that's all good. The issue is where we have that chronic inflammation. So where that and this is caused by things like cigarette smoke or potentially your diet can increase that level of inflammation, and that's what we call chronic inflammation. So it's not just that sort of acute response; it's something that's happening over long periods of time. So, you know, potentially years. And so this chronic inflammation is now understood to be linked to all sorts of chronic diseases, you know, cancer, heart disease, neurodegenerative disorders, as we've been talking about, but also our mental health. So I think I mentioned earlier, but we know that people with depression, as well as people with, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, they have higher levels of these inflammatory markers compared to healthy controls. When symptoms are resolved, so, you know, if people have, an acute bout of depression, they might have high levels of inflammation, but when they, you know, go on antidepressant therapy, their levels of inflammatory markers actually lower. And what I think is really interesting is this connection between the diet that we consume and our inflammation, and how that might be a potential pathway to influence our mental health. So we recently conducted what's called a meta review, which is this really large review that included over 4 million participants. And we found this association between a pro-inflammatory diet, and by that I mean a diet that is high in, you know, ultra-processed foods, refined carbohydrates, saturated fatty acids, and these sorts of things. And this was associated with a whole range of chronic diseases, that included depression. And so, again, I think it's this really interesting thing where we usually think about inflammation in terms of our, I guess, sort of physical chronic diseases, but it's also linked to our mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. Well explained. And this is the thing. We have a lot of power to influence our health from what we do every single day. But nothing, of course, is a panacea for everything, you know, just because you have a burger and chips one night doesn't mean you're going to suddenly have a load of inflammation. But it's the chronic or the ongoing diet like this. It's about getting your balance right, I think, in life and making overall lifestyle choices. Because, Wolf, you talk a lot as well about healthy brain function, and, you know, we haven't even mentioned exercise here, because that also has an impact, doesn't it?
Ah, absolutely. I mean, while, you know, exercise isn't necessarily my specialty. I can, you know, safely say that, you know, exercise, you know, is associated with improvements in inflammation. It has improvements in our neurogenesis, or growth of new brain cells. It can influence our microbiome. You know, we also have that release of endorphins. I think just sort of psychosocially, it's also, you know, when you're outside, you're receiving that sunshine, you're, you know, working out with friends, you know, there's all sorts of benefits to exercise. And I think this is a really great question, because I think it really points to the fact that, you know, we've talked a lot about diet, and as researchers, we like to zoom in on, you know, this one little factor, but it's really about a healthy lifestyle. It's not just about healthy diet. It's making sure that we have, you know, our sleep in check, we're exercising, we're social connections, stress management, you know, environmental factors like, you know, going outside, engaging with nature, all these sorts of things are what really, you know, influences our mental health. It's not just one thing.
No, absolutely. Now, we have lots of questions from our listeners for you, Wolf. And the first one, this is no surprise, really, with the marketplace for supplements. As we know, there are supplements for all sorts of ludicrous things. But Maria has said, are there any brain power supplements or specific things I can take to help my anxiety and my mood?
Yeah, sure. So I think, where to begin? I think with anxiety, it's a bit of a shame, because we have a lot of research that has looked at the effect of various supplements for depression, and some for you know, our severe mental illness, things like schizophrenia, but anxiety has been relatively neglected, and I'm not exactly sure why that is. But in terms of our dietary supplements and our you know, high levels of clinical evidence, you know, from randomized controlled trials, there isn't so much in the way that have been shown to be effective or have been investigated. But from what we do know, there are things like lavender. That is one. So lavender oil as a dietary supplement, not just the aroma, but also the dietary supplement. That has been one area where there's been a number of small randomized controlled trials.
I love lavender. Great.
Yeah, me too. And so that's been one that's been shown to reduce anxiety symptoms. The other one that I'll also mention is this compound within green tea. So it's L-theanine. So that's one where it seems to influence, I guess, various brain functions that are related to stress signaling and anxiety. The clinical evidence, like I said, is not so well developed, but I think it's an area where there's a number of, I know of a number of colleagues that are investigating that at the moment. But unfortunately, there isn't, like, I guess if we talk about depression, I think omega-3 fatty acids is one that's been very well researched and has, you know, a number of different studies to support it. But I think with anxiety, we just don't really have that sort of understanding just yet.
Yeah, no, 100%. But brilliant. It's got lots of things for you to try there as well that aren't necessarily, you know, like the lavender and things, meaning you have to go and buy a lot of pills, which I think is really reassuring there as well. A good question. I'm just trying to think of something we haven't already covered from Eliza. Eliza, this is interesting. I'm interested here, Wolf. I've no idea. She said, I'm going through the menopause. Will this affect my brain function?
To be honest, this isn't really necessarily my area of expertise. So I couldn't actually really tell you. I mean, I know there's all sorts of hormonal changes that occur, and whether that influences cognition or mental health, I'm sorry, I couldn't really tell you.
No, it's, you know, it's a very good question, Eliza. I think I'm going to have to make a note of that, and we're going to have to do another episode, I think, on menopause and get someone on to have a chat, because there must be gender differences as well, I guess, with the brain throughout the years.
Well, I think, you know, one thing that we learn with nutrition is it's all connected, right? So what's good for the brain is what's good for the heart, and what's good for the heart is what's good for, you know, our pancreas and all the rest of it. And so I think, you know, none of these systems work in isolation. So I wouldn't be surprised if it influences something for sure.
Absolutely. Do you know, this is something I'm trying to explain all the time, is that it's all connected. It's a big wheel. It's a cog. It's not just one item. It's the impact and knock-on effect. It's a big, it's the bigger picture, essentially.
Absolutely. One last... sorry, you go ahead.
No. You go ahead there before I do another question.
Oh, I guess I just to add to that, I think it's something that we come across quite often in terms of mental health research, where I think traditionally the sort of prevailing theory was that, you know, our body and mind are these two separate entities. And, you know, as we learn more and more about the role of, you know, the gut microbiome, inflammation, all that sort of stuff, we know that actually that's not the case at all. What influences our physical health influences our mental health, and that's the same for everything else.
Absolutely. That kind of answers Sam's question, which was, you know, is it all just in my genes, or can I, you know, have an impact in what I do? But I think we'll finish on this question from Daria. Daria has said, well, how many berries and how much fruit should I be eating every day to have a difference? I think she means, you know, with your research on blueberries and things.
Yeah, sure. So I guess there's a few things to say. So in terms of the research that has looked at, I guess we'll start with berries. The research that's looked at berries, they've used roughly about a cup of berries per day for their interventions. So that's where we've seen, you know, most of the improvement in our brain health or our cognitive function. But I think it's... I think we also have to keep in mind, I guess, the individual circumstance as well. So, you know, if you don't like to eat a cup of berries, or you're just, you know, sick of eating blueberries day in, day out, then that's obviously not the key. You know, maybe it's you know, a different type of fruit, or you know, maybe it's you know, half a cup with your yogurt or something like that. So I think that's what the evidence is sort of showing. But we don't necessarily have the research to say this is the point where the benefits happen, and anything below that is not useful. I think we just don't really have that data to say this is the exact dose that we need. Yeah. And so until then, I would just go with what you enjoy, I suppose.
Yes. Yes, exactly. What you enjoy is always an easier thing to stick at too. So we are now moving on to our fact or fiction round, Wolf. Are you ready for
this? Okay, I am ready.
If you could answer fact or fiction to the following questions.
Okay.
Blueberries are the best food source of antioxidants.
I would say that is fiction. So I guess to expand, that there are all sorts of foods that contain antioxidants. We want to eat, I guess the best advice is to eat a wide variety of plant foods, to consume the best sort of composition and array of different antioxidants. That's what's going to get the best bang for buck. It's not just one single food is what we need to focus on.
Brilliant. You must get 8 hours of sleep a night to function at your best.
Look, I think that's, can I say, like, fact-ish?
Yeah.
I think, you know, 8 hours is probably a decent benchmark or a heuristic to aim for, but certainly there are people that require more, and there are certainly people that seemingly can function with you know, less than that. But I think 8 hours is probably a good goalpost. What would your thoughts be?
Well, I mean, I'm from the parenthood angle of life now, where It's a dream. It's a distant dream for so many.
Sure.
But you know that when you get it, you function way better. So I would say the more sleep you can get that works for you, the better. I would completely agree with what you've said, but everyone's different. Eating chocolate on a daily basis will support your brain health.
I'm gonna again sort of fact-ish, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We have emerging research that shows that the sort of high polyphenol chocolate, so you know your really dark chocolate, seems to have an effect on cognition and cognitive performance, potentially on measures of mood. Obviously, this needs to be within the context of, I guess, dose. So, you know, we're not talking about a bar of chocolate, and large quantities every day. And it also needs to be within the context of an overall healthy dietary pattern. But I think a small bit of dark chocolate every day, I think, is one, very enjoyable and delicious, but two, I think there is, you know, some evidence to support that it might be something good for our brain health too.
Such a pro, answered with every caveat. Well done. That's so great when you interview another health pro. A diet rich in variety will support brain function.
That is fact times 10, I think.
Yay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good
I
one.
Think it's all about the diversity.
Exactly. Fish oil will always boost brain function.
I guess false or fiction. There is definitely some evidence related to omega-3 fatty acids in terms of its effect on brain development, certainly in terms of its effect on our mental health. But for the person, who's otherwise healthy, who's not experiencing, neurodegenerative disorders or cognitive decline or anything like that, I don't think the evidence really supports it being a brain booster on top of that.
No, exactly. Protein intake will support your mood.
I'd say fact. I think protein is provides some of the essential building blocks for, well, I guess everything that our body requires, that includes supporting our antioxidant defense systems, but also in terms of the production of our neurotransmitters, things like serotonin. So ensuring that we have adequate protein intake is important. Again, that doesn't mean that we need to start loading up on protein supplements and everything to, it's not more is more, but certainly an adequate intake is important for that.
Absolutely. Aerobic exercise is better for your mental well-being than anaerobic.
Ooh, so that's a good question. I would say false or fiction. There is a large amount of evidence to support the role of aerobic exercise in our mental health. And certainly much of the evidence to date has been focusing on aerobic exercise. But the data around resistance training, strength-based exercise is also very supportive. It's just not as well developed. And I think, going back to that sort of psychosocial context, if you really hate jogging, but you really enjoy, lifting weights or something like that, then I think, we want to support any form of exercise and whatever your preference is.
Brilliant. Hydration is one of the biggest contributors to how productive we are.
Yeah, I'd say that's true. I think, we all don't drink enough water. And I think hydration is an important factor in terms of, our blood pressure and our, levels of energy and fatigue throughout the day.
Absolutely. That was a brilliant fact or fiction round. Thank you.
I enjoyed that. I've never done that before.
Well, you did it expertly well. And sadly, it nearly wraps up the episode, but we do always finish with a take-home message, a food for thought. And I think mine today would definitely be off the back of speaking with you, Wolf, the fact that, you know, we are unique, but we've got such exciting data at our fingertips now that, you know, it does have an impact how we choose to live our lives and the access to food we have and all these different factors. Small changes can make big results, essentially. And, you know, no matter what you're faced with right now, maybe you can set yourself a tiny challenge to have another glass of water or to try and get some of those dark coloured fruits into your diet. You know, in fact, exploring the relationships is something we did a lot in the clinic between how food really makes us feel and getting obviously beyond the relationship with food that you have, but trying to think about food in a much more broader way. Like we discussed the folate earlier, and you know, a lot of you will only have heard of this in terms of pregnancy, but there's so much more to food than just one specific thing. You can't buy a miracle supplement and expect it to have an amazing impact. It's your overall diet. It all works in a little wheel or cog, so maybe a little activity.
Absolutely.
You know, in my book on page, got it written down somewhere, hang on, page 56, that's the one, work on the food and mood diary. Just have a think about what you're doing, and that can often help just to see things written down. But Wolf, if you could leave our listeners with a food for thought today, what would that be?
Yeah, so I think I might piggyback on off your sentiments. I think we've talked a lot about the biological connection between food and our brain health. We've talked about, you know, inflammation and antioxidants and various nutrients and everything. But I think just to also zoom out from that and remember that food can also be a source of, you know, enjoyment. It's a setting for socialization. All these sorts of other psychosocial benefits that you don't get by taking a supplement or by focusing on a key nutrient. It's something to be enjoyed and to be experienced.
Absolutely. Well, Wolf, thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed being able to chat with you today. Where can everybody go to learn a bit more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on Twitter at @Marks_Wolf, or you can follow along with the research that we do at thefoodandmoodcenter.com.au.
Perfect. Wolf, thank you for coming on Food for Thought.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
If you've all enjoyed Food for Thought, you're going to love what's coming up. We've got so many amazing episodes. So if you're not already, make sure you subscribe, because that way it will just pop up and tell you it's ready for you to listen to every single Monday. And it would be brilliant if you have time to leave a review. I know now and understand that these reviews of how you feel the podcast goes, or if you learn anything from it, can help other people reach it, and hopefully they'll be able to take a lot away from it too. So for more information about my best-selling book, The Science of Nutrition, please do let me know if you've got your copy. The Retrition Clinic, if you want to book in and get some advice, healthy recipes, and so much more, please go and visit retrition.com. And you can follow me at Retrition on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.